The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
He breaks down plays better than anyone.
I mean, this is like Shark Week now. And you know what Baker Mayfield is? He's chum. Look at these sharks. You think you're getting away from those four angry sharks? It's Shark Week. It's time to eat. Make the read. Urgency. That's the name of the game right here. Urgency. Now. On it. He's on it. Touchdown. Beautiful throw.
He's our 95.7 The Game NFL insider, Brian Baldinger.
Joining us on the River Islands guest line, it is Brian Baldinger, presented by our proud partner, Golden State Lumber, serving the Bay Area for three generations. Building better starts with Golden State. When you succeed, we succeed. Visit goldenstatelumber.com. And again, he is on the River Islands guest line. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Is it a time for you to discover the islands? That is River Islands in Lathrop. He joins us every week here on the Morning Roast. He is one of the most dependable aspects of the Morning Roast. We love chatting with him. Brian Baldinger. Baldy, how are you today? I hope you're done with your Christmas shopping.
I'm actually finished yesterday, I think. I mean, it might be a couple things I might have to grab today, but somehow in between breaking down every game, traveling, doing games, I got it done. I'm not sure. You know, it's like, you know, like that thing when you buy a gift for somebody, you're not really sure if it's gonna hit, if it's gonna fit, if it's gonna connect. You just go, just please. All I want to see is just like, thank you and a big smile, whatever. So I have some trepidation right now about some of the things I got.
Oh, wow. If Brian Baldinger gets nervous about his gifts, what hope do I have? Like, I got to figure, like, you think the thought counts at this point, though, right, Baldy?
That's what I might say. If anybody that gets me anything, I'm, like, so grateful. I don't care what it is, because I know that they put energy and thought into it. So I don't really care, you know? But some people, you know, like, it's, you know, they get,
you took,
know,
you took the time.
Wall, so.
You took the time for it. That's all you can do.
And that's gift enough as it is. Brian Baldinger joining us here on the on the Morning Roast here on 95.7 Game with Sam Lubman and Jake Hutchinson. He is our Odyssey NFL insider. Catch him on the Best Football Show podcast. Baldy, you know, we're talking about gifts, talking about the thought they're putting into things. Brock Purdy, he's obviously putting a lot of thought into these games that he's going into here. I'll just keep it a simple question here to start things off, Baldy. You know, give us your overall breakdown of how Brock looked against the Dolphins on Sunday.
I thought he was good, honestly. You know, he got hit on the one interception. You know, there's not much he could do when the ball pops up like that. But, you know, I mean, obviously they're spraying the ball to Kittle, and they're getting good production out of Kittle. They couldn't finish drives, and, you know, it was just, they're a 17-point offense right now. I mean, they're not getting much out of the running game. They're down to the fourth running back. They're trying to cobble it together with Debo and all the different things they tried, and even some runs by Purdy. But, you know, it's just not in a real explosive offense right now. But I thought Brock was fine. I thought he threw the ball. I thought he drove the ball pretty well. You know, he spread it around to different guys. We got, you know, what we saw from Debo, honestly, is what you have to do to Debo. He's not a guy, you've got to get him on the move. You get Debo on the move, a crossing route, an out route, something like that where he's running, and you put it right on his fingertips, like he's going to get yards after the catch like he's done throughout his career. But if you're asking him to go beat guys and one-on-ones and comebacks, you know, he's not that typical of a guy to cover right now.
Yeah, staying focused on Brock here really quick. He threw that interception on their second-to-last drive of the game. It kind of killed any chance they had at a comeback there. Baldy, these fourth-quarter interceptions from Brock Purdy, I've noticed a pattern with some of them. There was one against the Chiefs with about 9 minutes left. They're trying to bring the score to 20. They were down 21-12. Brock throws an interception in the end zone. There was one against the Cardinals where they were trying to get a two-minute drive going there. Rams, same thing. Same thing against the Dolphins. I've noticed all those interceptions. He had a defensive lineman basically in his lap on those throws there. And I'm looking at that there, and it's like, I'm not kind of sure, like, what's Brock really supposed to do in those situations where he's basically throwing the ball while the defender is driving into him because the guy in front of him isn't picking up his block? Like, what more can Brock really be doing in those situations? Does he just have to take the sack there? What are you seeing in these situations when Brock's getting hit while he throws?
Sam, honestly, it's how you should evaluate. Because, you know, I can think back to, I remember the Arizona Cardinal one, clear. And even last week, you know, Zach Sealer, who I hope goes to the Pro Bowl. He's been a dominant defensive tackle for Miami all year. Really phenomenal player. But he runs a twist stunt inside with Calais Campbell. And he comes free, he hits him right in the chest. He can't, like, you know, he's trying to drive the ball. You can see the route combination. Debo's clearing out the middle, you know, and he's really opening it up right here. And he just can't drive the ball where he wants to put it. And the underneath defender, you know, intercepts it. A similar thing happened against Arizona. The one against the Rams, honestly, I thought there was interference on Darius Williams out there. Like he got position on Juwan on that play, and, you know, it makes it look like it's a terrible interception. But I thought there was contact where Juwan couldn't keep going. But honestly, I remember one year, Sam, when Eli Manning led the league in interceptions. And I went back and watched the whole interception reel. I think there was 16 or 18. I forget the number. But, like, on every single, almost every one, the ball was tipped. The route, you know, Jeremy Shockey ran the wrong route. I mean, you go through the list, and you go, not all of these are Eli's fault. But I never heard Eli complain. I never heard him say anything about the interception. Like, sometimes you just have to take it. You have to say, it's on me. Regardless, if you get hit, smacked, if there's a common theme here where you got to protect better. The quarterback, honestly, has to just take it in stride. It's you never put an asterisk next to that interception saying, well, if Zach Sealer didn't hit him, he probably makes that throw across the middle where they want to attack.
Baldy, on that note, I think one common theme for the 49ers this season, part of the reason Brock has been so inconsistent, is their protections. And as a former offensive lineman, it seems like a lot of the times when they overload one side or have a simulated pressure, the 49ers are rarely accounting for that right. And they put a lot of, they rarely let their quarterback, you know, adjust at the line of scrimmage. I think the timings is part of that. You usually put it on their center. I mean, how do you see them, the way they're handling those protections? And do you think they need to reevaluate maybe putting some of that on Brock in maybe key situations in third downs going forward? Or maybe what is the solution there?
It's a good question. And I don't know if there's one easy answer to it. Honestly, every defensive coordinator in this league, they spend literally 80% of the week breaking down protections. And what you're going to be based on formation, down distance, tendencies, and how do you attack. Like Arizona beat them. But Arizona wins a lot of these protection breakdowns. This Nick Raelis, the defense coordinator at Arizona, is excellent at it. He did it to Sam, Sam in Minnesota this year, and they got to him on three third downs. And they really didn't have an answer. And he did this. He had some key pressures against San Francisco this year. And so you say, okay, can you fix it at the line of scrimmage? The quarterback sees it, recognizes something that isn't built into the play. Should he be able to change it? He should. I don't care what the offense is. He should be able to, if he can. But sometimes you change the whole play, and all they do is bluff, and they don't come. And then what happens? So there's kind of a, if and, like, quid pro quo there, right there, on based on the question. And I don't know that there's an absolute definitive answer to beat that. You hope that, but within the protection that's called, within the play that's called, you hope that there is an answer to it. And so sometimes, say it's 3rd and 10, and they overload and they pressure you, and you got to get the ball out quick, and the answer is a check down to McCaffrey or to Debo or, pick a guy. I mean, Sauber. Let's just say there's a check down. Well, sometimes that's what the defense wants you to do, and they go tackle the catch, and you're punting on 4th and 8. It's the cat and mouse that goes on every week. Offense coordinator, defense coordinator, play call, defensive coordinator.
It does seem like defenses have exploited that and forced them into that, especially on those 3rd and longs. I wanted to ask you, as in terms of just, philosophy, building this roster going forward. We talked to, their offensive line coach and run game coordinator, Chris Foerster, at the start of this season, sort of after the draft, and sort of why didn't they go for an offensive lineman? They got jumped by the Ravens for Roger Rosengarten, which is looking kind of tough for them now. And I think you go to Chris Foerster, and he said they generally, sort of value skill position players in those first two rounds, and they can find offensive linemen, sort of in the 3rd rounds and on, and coach them up. I guess, what do you think of that philosophy, and do you think the 49ers should reevaluate that going forward?
Well, I mean, they got Dominic Clooney. And, honestly, they got themselves a right guard for a long time. And I don't think they knew that. But he's been an excellent player for most of the year. I mean, you could pick out a couple of plays from him. But he's been a very steady player. Now, Rosengarten has played himself into a good role with the Ravens. They're a run-first team, heavy run. But I've seen him have his moments at right tackle against elite rushers. Regardless, it's interesting because I was just breaking down the Green Bay Packers last night. They don't have a first-round pick. They got a 5th rounder at right tackle, Zach Tom. They got a 6th rounder in Rasheed Walker. They don't have a 1st round pick in the line, but they're excellent. They're excellent in protection. They're excellent in running with football. Josh Jacobs is having a great season. So, to me, you can spend high 1st round picks at offensive line. It's not going to guarantee anything until you coach them up and you figure out how to play them. I think the 49ers need upgrades. There were 4 really good centers in this draft. That I would have taken one of them. Zach Razor, to me, is a frontline center. Graham Barton has made all the difference in the world in Tampa. Like, I think they got to upgrade the center. I say this to offensive line coaches, and I would say it to Chris as well. And I respect Chris Foerster. I think Chris is an excellent coach. But I would say that if your center isn't strong, your offensive line is never going to be great. The Eagles are fortunate that they have a succession plan of Jason Kelce. And Cam Jurgens has been excellent. And the offensive line has stayed strong. But if they didn't have that succession plan, they threw a guy in there. Like, I don't think they'd be where they're at right now. So that's what I would say going forward. Like, I would look at the center position to upgrade that position. And like I said, there were some excellent prospects at center in this last draft.
Again, talking about the offensive line, Trent Williams didn't play on Sunday, and Kyle Shanahan, I believe, made it official yesterday that Trent will not be playing in these next 2 games here. He's going to be 37 years old next year, plays one of the most demanding positions in all of professional sports. I'm looking at Trent Williams. Is he a guy, does he still have enough left in the tank to be a reliable option for the 49ers at left tackle next year and protect Brock's blindside?
If you said to me right now, Sam, we're going to get 14 starts out of Trent. If we're going to get 14 starts, because there's going to be some nicks and things that happen when you're that age, I'd sign up for the 14 starts and take them. Like, I would take what he gives you in those 14 starts, I would take that. Now, he's been, like, this is a little unusual for Trent since he's been in San Francisco this amount of time that he's missed. He's had other ankle injuries and things. Every injury is a little bit different. But if I knew right now that I could get 14 starts from Trent, I would take it. I think missing all of the offseason and all the camp hurt him. It hurts everybody. You can't build your body up the way you need to. You can go out there in East Texas or Houston. And you can train the heat and you can stay in shape. And you can do all those things. It's not the same as working with Aaron Banks, working with, guys going through training camp and just building up the calluses I think you need to build in order to sustain yourself through a season. So I think from that aspect, if you got an off season from Trent and a preseason and you give me 14 starts, I'm taking them.
And then on that, that's great. That's interesting on Trent and love to hear that. But When it comes to that offensive line again, when Trenton went down, Jalen Moore came in to be that left tackle until he went down with a quad injury, and unfortunately, Jalen Moore, his season is done as well. In the brief times that Jalen Moore was handling that left tackle position, what were your thoughts on just how he played there?
Well, he doesn't have, but it's not fair to go Trent to Jalen.
Oh no, I'm not asking for an apples comparison.
No, I'm not comparing him.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, he gives you what he's got. He looks like a backup swing tackle is what he looks like. Like if the Eagles went to, say, Jack Driscoll, you know, because Lane Johnson was out or Malad was out, and they went to Jack, Jack would give you what Jalen gave you. It's okay, and the guys around him have to be good, and he's serviceable. But he looks like a backup player to me. And so you're just going to miss. You're against the elite players, He's gonna have his moments where he's gonna need some help in the pass rush. In the run game, you're not gonna get the same level of movement or anything close to it that you're used to seeing. And or the cutoff, you know, I always say this about Trent, like his cutoff blocks are better than most people's front side blocks. And I've said this for a while when McCaffrey was rolling last year, no matter where the play started, and it ended up behind Trent. And so You see things that nobody else really can do. There's a couple guys that might be able to do what Trent does, but there's very few. So just by contrast, you're going to say Jalen struggles. But he was okay. He was all right now.
Baldy, just wanted to switch to the other side of the trenches here. It seemed a little bit, you know, like the Dolphins copied some of the, it felt like the Lions last year ran a lot of duo and double teamed and attacked the 49ers linebackers getting to the second level. It feels like that's been a theme this season where Fred Warner's been basically attacked. Do you think the 49ers, and maybe it's a personnel issue because it's looked a lot better with Dre Greenlaw out there, but it feels like the 49ers haven't had the defensive tackles to sort of run the wide nine scheme that they like to run and hold up in the run game. I mean, do you think they maybe need to reevaluate that wide nine scheme going forward?
Yeah, I do. I do think so because it has not been effective. And, I mean, Floyd's given you a little bit, and Nick has not had a great year. He would admit to that. And so the defensive line, in general, I mean, last week was a prime example. I mean, now Tua gets rid of the ball awfully fast, probably. I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me, but probably faster than any other quarterback in the league. So you're not going to affect him very much. And even if it's third and long, I mean, they got the speed just to throw jump balls and push the ball down the field with some of the guys that they have. But I would say that they have to evaluate that right now. I know Nick loves it, and he gets to play in space. Now, I think a lot of teams started attacking Nick on that wide nine in the run game and just chipping him. And some nasty chips, and he had to kind of cut it down because the splits were just too big and receivers were just chipping them and, I mean, knocking the hell out of them in the pass rush. So I do think it should be evaluated, but the defensive line has been a problem. Javon Hargrave goes down, Armstead's not here. Malik Collins has been the best interior defense line, and, you know, Gibbons got hurt. Like, it's just been, you know, great. It's given you nothing, you know, in the last two seasons. Like, it has to be addressed. It's a weakness to this team right now. And I think, to your point, I think Fred has really struggled. Not really struggled. I mean, he was awesome early in the year. I'm sure the injury is real. He's not the same player the second half of the season as we're used to seeing. But a healthy Greenlaw and Fred inside with stud defensive tackles, I think you'll see some of the plays that we're used to seeing from those two guys.
Speaking of Dre Greenlaw, he did get a few reps in on Sunday before coming out with a calf injury, and he's the other guy who we might not see him again for the rest of the year. I know he's about to hit free agency. My personal guess is I expect Dre Greenlaw to be back with his team next year, Baldy, but was it necessary for Dre Greenlaw to take the field on Sunday?
Well, I don't know what the injury was the week before when he came out of the game. I'm not sure.
I think I said it was fatigue, I believe.
Fatigue.
His knee was sore, and he wanted to be careful with it, and so they protected him.
All right. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, whatever it was, you know, he came out. Like, I'm just – these guys that don't go through any offseason or training camp, and they – like McCaffrey. I mean, you're going to see a high propensity of injuries. And it might not be related to the actual injury that kept him out in the first place, but you're going to see just, you see these guys right now that don't go through training camp. Like, they don't survive. It's hard enough to survive the season as it is, but if they're not going to an off-season, not going to training camp, and then they're just being thrown out there at game speed, you're going to see a high propensity of injuries going forward. It just is. Look, the year before, it was fortunate that Nick got through the year and had the year that he had, missing all of camp in the offseason. It's rare. But generally speaking, guys that don't have an offseason struggle with injuries during the season.
I'm with you, Baldy. I was there in training camp, and they had just second stringers and third stringers out there, and the vibes were weird, and you had all these holdouts, and it just did not bode well for this season. One guy that was out there and has been out there all year long is George Kittle, and you were a big proponent of early in the season just targeting him in the red zone, and he's been really like the one consistent guy they've had. One thing they've done, I think, last week and against Chicago that they waited seemingly all season to do is targeting Kittle in the screen game and really targeting him that way. And it's been incredibly effective. I wonder, you know, why do you think they've waited so long to get him involved in the offense in that way?
That's a great question, Jake, honestly. Like, I was on this program weeks ago saying, because I played tight end early on before I got moved to line. And I always watch tight ends. Like, I still feel like I'm a tight end at heart. I said on the show, I can draw you five plays to get George Kittle the ball against anybody. I don't care what defense you're playing. And one of them was a tunnel screen they ran last week. You can run. I see these tight ends run these delayed screens all the time where they're staying in, they're the sixth offensive line, and they're blocking, and they leak out late, and everybody takes their eyes off them. Like, there's so many different ways to get the tight end the ball. And you can run your offense. You can have your play sheet and all. Like, you should have a separate sheet in that play sheet, and we all know, color-coded, number 85. These balls are to get the ball to Kittle. I don't care if it's 3rd and 10 or it's 1st and 20. I can get Kittle the ball. And they're doing it to him more frequently. He's the MVP of the team. You know, I mean, and the guy plays his heart out. He's excellent after the catch. He's excellent with the ball in his hands. He punishes everybody that has to try to tackle him. Like, there's no reason why George isn't targeted 10 times a game right now.
I agree with you, Baldy. And it seems like so many of these Niners drives where it's just they're driving for the game, basically, and Kittle doesn't get a target. It's just, it's so frustrating. Another frustration this season, it's been Ricky Pearsall. And now a lot of it isn't, you know, obviously his fault. He had that tragic incident at the beginning of the year where he was shot, missed a lot of training camp. Had only three practices before the season. Then, you know, on Sunday, he has those two illegal formation penalties. I guess one of them, though, was actually on Kittle. But Ricky didn't get a single target the rest of the game after that. And it's just so hard to see Ricky kind of struggling to get a foothold this season while watching guys drafted after him. Keon Coleman, Xavier Leggett, Ladd McConkey find, you know, different levels of success with their respective teams. I'm just curious, in this season with Ricky Pearsall, like, what is the big takeaway that we can get with what Ricky has done this year with all that he has gone through, all that he has not been able to go through? What do we take away from what Ricky's done this year in his rookie season?
Man, that's a good question, Sam, honestly, because there's not much. I mean, outside of the fact that, you know, since he came back, did he come back, what, Kansas City game? I forget which was his first start. But I think it was Kansas City. But you know, it's been slim. Like, you haven't seen a presence about him. Like, I can watch Ladd McConkey and I go, this guy, first of all, he's always open. He's always, you know, getting yards after the catch. It's amazing. You watch that last game against Denver. The guy, they didn't cover him for six catches, basically. But he's got a great feel, zone versus man, where to go, where to settle. And the quarterback's got a relationship with him. I don't feel like there's any relationship between Brock and Ricky right now. Like, there's just this built-in kinetic sense between the two. The way I see, even Malik Nabers, all the different quarterbacks with the Giants, Brock Bowers, all the different quarterbacks. Like, you can see that there's this effort to get those guys the ball, and they're all going to have 100 catches plus. But I just don't see the play calls, and I don't see the connection with the quarterback right now between him and Ricky. And so you go, well, what is he? I honestly don't know. Is he truly a number one pick? I thought so coming out of Florida, like he was at the very bottom of the first round. But regardless of where he's taken, like, he has to have more production than what we're getting, period. When you're taking that high and you lose your number one receiver in IU, like, there's got to be more production from him. Based on just his measurables, what he did at Florida, all this stuff, and you're not seeing it. So what's my takeaway? I feel like it's just an incomplete year. Like, you know, it's like that grade that you don't get a grade. You know, it's just incomplete. We got to wait and see.
Baldy, I think that's an interesting topic. It's tough. You'd like to see what those guys could do after a full off season together going into next year, and hopefully we get that. I think it begs some questions. Just when you look at this entire roster, I guess this is Christmas, and we're making a wish list of what you could add to this roster. It could be a player in next year's draft. It could be somebody on NFL roster. What would you add if you could add at one position, one player to this team? What would you like to add to this 49ers roster?
Well, I mean, they need speed. They need speed on this team. And so offensively, like, I understand McCaffrey, you know, has been, you know, it's been an incomplete year for Christian, too. So, I mean, he would certainly help this whole offense. But I think just they need speed. Like, you saw what Garendo gave him in the run game when he was just that rotational player. Like, you could give it to him, he could make a house call. But you still see that. You don't see the big plays. I watched Jameson Williams go 82 yards the other day. Right? I mean, just ran right by the free safety. So they need speed. Defensive end would certainly be nice. Somebody that could just run and chase. Quarterback gets flushed. You know, Micah Parsons, like, there's only, you know, Micah Parsons. Nobody else like it. But, like, a speed component to this team at any position, whether it's defensive end, receiver, they need that element to this team.
All right, Baldy, two quick ones here before we get you out of here. First one is obviously the one we ask every week, where you're going to be this week. And then number two, it's Christmas Eve. What are the go-to Brian Baldinger Christmas movies?
Well, I mean, Home Alone is good. You know, Elf is good. Like, I have a goddaughter, Mia, and my brother's youngest daughter. And for years, I'd go to his house for Christmas Eve. And we would drive around the neighborhood and look at all the lights. Then we would come home, make popcorn, go down to the basement. We would watch a Christmas movie.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, it was an annual tradition for probably 10 straight years. And we'd be on the couch eating popcorn, just laughing our asses off, right? So that was a tradition. And then what was the first question, Sam? I forget.
Oh, yeah, then just where are you going to be this week?
Oh, yeah. Well, but it just changed my game. Like, I was going to Tampa, which I was excited about. Because I'm in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm just going to go across the state and see if Tampa could close out the deal against Carolina and win the division. But that game just got flexed. So now they're sending me to Cleveland, which is awesome. Oh, I get to see Miami try to win a game in cold weather, which has not happened. So I'm sure we're going to show all those graphics about Tua and weather below 40 degrees and all that kind of stuff. But so I'm going to Cleveland, Miami, Cleveland. Miami still has an outside chance. We're just trying to find a game that had some meaning. I had to do it in the 4 o'clock window. There's only two games. So I'm going to Cleveland this weekend.
Awesome. Well, Baldy, we're excited to always have you on. Thank you for joining myself and Jake this morning. Yeah. Have a very Merry Christmas, and we will talk to you next week.
I'm so looking forward to it. I'm having a Christmas Eve party here in Florida. It's all, like, I have nothing to do with it. My girlfriend does everything. I'm not even allowed to ask questions.
You just get
to
enjoy it?
I'm here to entertain. I'm bringing my personality, and I'm going to drink red wine, and that's it.
I love that.
Sounds like a great party.
That's the way to do it. Appreciate you, Baldy. Appreciate you.
All right, Jake. Nice work with you. See you, Sam. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, Baldy. Thank you so much for joining us. That is Brian Baldinger there joining us on the Morning Roast, courtesy of the River Islands Guest Line. All of our guests appear on the River Islands Guest Line. A shout out to Golden State Lumber.